I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thank you for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with Kelsey Marrera, founder of DOGHP, D-O-U-G-H-P. After leaving a career in tech at a young age and getting sober, Kelsey founded an edible cookie dough company inspired by her journey with recovery. Kelsey shares her story and how DOGHP aims to reduce social stigmas around addiction and mental health. She also talks about the many fun flavors of the cookie dough. The company offers alternative ingredients to make their cookie dough so it's safe to eat raw or baked. Here's my conversation with the founder of DOGHP, Kelsey Marrera. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, how did you find yourself starting up a company? Share your backstory because you definitely have a backstory leading up to this point.
Absolutely. It's like, how am I running a cookie dough company? I was a big dessert lover as a kid and loved to bake with my family, but sort of lost touch with it over the years. I started in corporate America at a really young age, just 16 years old, and jumping into that was tough on my mental health. Wasn't coping with that in the best way and had developed a really unhealthy relationship with alcohol over the years. But I got sober in 2015 and it really opened the doors for me to figure out who I am and what I love and what my hobbies are. And I really got back to what I used to love as a kid, which was baking. So I was living in the kitchen nights and weekends from my tech job at the time and really figuring out that maybe I could do something on my own. And through a venture into veganism in my early sobriety, I tried being a vegan, but I totally sucked at that. I was still using butter, but had a great egg substitute. It was tough to let go, but I had this great egg substitute in my recipes. And so I realized like my cookie dough was totally safe to consume raw. I was saving a bowl of it to snack on through the week. And then I could bake cookies when I wanted. And that was the big light bulb of like, this could be my thing. You know, I really could make desserts my life and start a cookie dough company, which is, you know, grown to become so much more than just about the cookie dough, but it was a sweet start for sure.
No pun intended, I'm sure. So let me back up a little bit because you crammed a lot in there. Giving up your probably comfortable tech job at Intel and taking the big leap, what was the process from the planning to the execution? Because it's one thing to say it, it's one thing to dream it, it's another thing to implement it and put it in place.
Yeah, so it was about February of 2017 when the idea really struck. And, you know, I was still working at Intel, really loved what I was doing there, actually, and feeling like excited in that role. But it wasn't quite as excited as I felt while I was in the kitchen and with this recipe that I had and started having some friends try it and getting that feedback of like, whoa, this is seriously really good. So the initial stages were kind of planning from February until April. I was getting my sabbatical with Intel at the time, so I was going to have 10 weeks off, actually, and I had a whole backpacking trip that I'd planned, you know, through Southeast Asia and everything I was going to go do, and totally put it on the side. And I said, this is an opportunity for me to test this business idea and use the 10 weeks to see if this could really be something. So I got all the business licensing in place and figured out a commercial kitchen space that I could use by the hour in Oakland. And I used to like get my wagon of ingredients together and cart it over on public transit from SF over to Oakland, make the cookie dough and then cart it back over. So I did that for the very first time for April 20th of 2017 and set out with a little food cart I had built for like $500 and set up at a park in San Francisco and sold out in 3 hours. That was the first day of my sabbatical and the first day of DOGHP. And that was my sign that like, this could really, 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 really be something. People like it. They're willing to pay the price that I'm thinking for it. And they're intrigued by the idea and they love the recipe. So all the pieces started to fall into place from there. And at the end of the 10 weeks, I had to call my boss at the time and say, I'm going to be putting in my notice, you know, this cookie dough thing's really, really taken off. I'm going to do it. And yes, everyone thought I was having a quarter life crisis, leaving, as you said, you know, very comfortable career, very cushy salary for something I was passionate about.
Wow, how nice to be able to follow something you're passionate about. I think that's a great job when you can do that. Now, I want to talk about the company itself. Your company deliberately and intentionally has a mental health policy. I want you to share some details about it, what you are promoting as a top person of the company.
So in late 2017, was the first time I had shared my recovery journey with our followers on social media and started to get in these messages from people on you know, both the mental health aspects of my journey and the decision to get into recovery and how it related with people of all walks of that spectrum, you know, from curiosity around it to people that were newly sober to those who had been, you know, struggling with mental health or addiction for many years and wanting somebody to talk to about it. So I started the Dope for Hope initiative and decided that the company would, you know, walk the walk both with what we do outside, but also inside the company. And so the mental health policy, as you mentioned, is kind of the key pillar there. Dope became a designated recovery-friendly workplace thanks to our policy and what we do in our company culture to help employees bring their full selves to work and, you know, be able to really be themselves and know it's okay to not be okay, to talk about what's really going on and kind of shake the old status quo of like leave your home life at home and, you know, pretend like you're basically a robot when you come into the office. So we offer, you know, no questions asked mental health days, mental health care subsidies, and that can be for therapy or a float spa or whatever self-care is for you, even down to the day-to-day how we show up in the workplace and from the management levels. For example, like when I take a vacation, I really take a vacation. I don't set that example that, you know, you need to be answering emails or responding at all hours of the day. And even when you're gone, you know, when we take off, we really take off and want to show that example to our staff to really let them recharge when they get that opportunity. So we have a Mental Health Monday channel in our Slack online communication, letting everyone share one high and one low from their last week as well. Just various ways we've brought it into the company culture to really be okay with talking about the hard stuff in life and letting, you know, words like anxiety and depression and family struggles and all that not be uncommon, you know, topic place in the workplace and let that be okay.
Let's really open it up. You said a lot in that answer, so I want to break that down just a little bit. You talk about Mental Health Day and you mentioned Mental Health Monday. You said they get a day off with no questions asked. Are you ever worried that that's, or would other CEOs, if they were to follow in your kind of your template, be worried that that's being taken advantage of, or it's the right thing to do for the employee because they come back better and stronger? Tell me a little bit about that Mental Health Day and being comfortable as a CEO.
For sure. I mean, you know, in function, it's no different than a sick day. And someone can and will, if they are having a mental health crisis, absolutely call and pretend to cough and be sick. And, you know, usually they kind of had to like fake that they were sick to get the day off or say why they couldn't come in. So all I'm really doing is opening up the door for the honesty, for the employer-employee relationship to say what's really happening and let them be comfortable to tell me, hey, I just had an anxiety attack this morning, or I'm going through XYZ in my life and, you know, I'm kind of in a bit of a depressive swing. Like, could I take the day? And of course, it's amazing to be able to give them that day off, but how great it is to have the communication to know to check in with them, to, you know, reach back out when they're back on and see how everything's going and just have that insight into their life. So often, you know, employee performance starts to struggle or things are kind of going downhill and you're not getting that insight in the old world. They're keeping it from you and not telling you what's really happening. So you can't help, you know, you can't provide resources or offer them support or tell them, you know, some various outlets that they could be reaching out to get connected and get the help they need. You know, if it goes as far as to the extremes, like being a CEO that's in a position to help someone who may be contemplating suicide, you know, work is often the last place people are showing up. So I feel like employers just have such a responsibility to open up that door. And, you know, I think you build greater trust and loyalty with an employee versus the concern of someone abusing the system. And it's not to say there's never going to be a bad apple in the world, but I think all of the normal and great apples you do have are just strengthened by something like this.
Wow, that's a great outlook on that. Let me reintroduce my guest is Kelsey Marrera. She is the founder of a company called Dope. That's D-O-U-G-H-P. And I'm going to ask you about the name of that in just a little bit. But in the meantime, I want to jump back to some of the things that you have listed. We mentioned Mental Health Monday. You also have other, I guess, programs. And maybe this is all part of just your giving back, but the open heart policy, the support the world, and employee donation matching. Tell me about those and why those are important to you as the leader.
Yeah, I mean, the open heart policy is another thing where this didn't cost anything for me to go out and say this, to share with the employees when they sign this policy upon joining the company that we have an open heart, you know, besides just the kind of classic open door phrase, that's the play on words here. An open heart policy just really means like I'm here with an open heart to hear and receive and support them in any way that they need. So they don't have to be afraid, coming up and sharing anything. And then on the donation side, so one major portion of Dope for Hope is that we donate 1% of all of our sales company-wide to a nonprofit in the space. It's the She Recovers Foundation for women who are in or seeking recovery. And on top of that, we wanted to encourage our employees to get involved. And if they make donations to any mental health or recovery associated nonprofit, we'll match those donations. So that's another just way we can kind of extend our capacity to support the cause with others that are already doing great work in the space.
Boy, you really put your money where your mouth is, don't you? You back it up from the top down. So it probably works in that environment. When you believe it, then the others will follow and believe it as well.
Absolutely. And I'm just such a big proponent of companies really walking the walk when they're out there saying, oh, you know, we do X for every purchase. And it's kind of like, I always wonder, how is that coming to life inside of their company? You know, like, how do their employees feel if they can be outward talking about all the, here's the philanthropic stuff we kind of do on the side. And when I was creating DOPE and starting the DOPE for Hope initiative, realizing that I have a platform that can do good in the world, like, I wanted it to be for real, you know, not just a show. It's not just some side thing. It's something that, you know, deeply impacted and continues to impact my life personally. And I just feel this responsibility to help others know that they're not alone in what they're going through and to really bring this to life authentically through a company.
I think anytime people think they're not alone in this and there's others just like it, and if people aren't having the discussion about it, then they do think they are isolated and by themselves. But the minute they are able to hear that, you know, the gal sitting next to you or the guy across the hall or whatever is going through the same thing, then it suddenly becomes, okay, I'm not in this by myself. What would you like other companies to do? I know you have this template of what you're doing at your company. What would you invite other CEOs or other companies to at least explore or be open-minded to trying some of these things in their company?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just all about getting started somewhere. You know, start the conversation of even like the Mental Health Monday internal communication of a routine where every Monday, you know, you and your team, or maybe you have an all hands meeting where you guys all get together and everyone could share one high and one low from their last week. And bit by bit, as more vulnerability and openness is shown, both from you and others in the management, everybody starts to loosen up and open up, and you learn a great deal about the people who are working day in and day out for you, and you can support them at a deeper level. So yeah, I think my advice to any CEOs or other founders out there is, you know, just get started somewhere and know that your organization is not immune to struggles with mental health and addiction recovery. You know, 1 in 12 American adults are in recovery, and that's just those who have identified enough to be surveyed. So you've got to imagine if you've got, you know, more than 12 employees, there's a good chance that somebody's in recovery, and it's, you know, 1 in 5 struggling with mental illness. So even more so, it's just a topic that can't be ignored in today's day.
Very good. We'll talk some more about that. We need to take a quick break, but when we return, I'll continue my conversation with Kelsey Morera. She is the founder of the company DOPE. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lifestyles. If you're just joining us, our guest is Kelsey Morera. She is the founder, CEO, the top baker, I don't know, of DOPE. It's spelled D-O-U-G-H-P, and it's a cookie dough company. And we're learning more about the company and your philosophy that you have to run the company. I want to ask, I read this. I want you to tell me about this process. It says, not to fake it till you make it. Tell me where you're going with that.
Don't fake it till you make it. Yeah, I think it's just about really assessing where you're at and being okay with feeling the feelings. Sometimes we want to stuff and hide and not really go through, but the healthiest, you know, best way to go through challenging times is to really feel it, to find communities that you can connect with across this issue, to find, you know, professional help if it's needed, and be able to reach out and really share. I think there's kind of that temporary mask we can put on to make it through certain situations, but in the long run, you know, faking it till you make it won't serve you. You know, it won't really work through what's brewing underneath.
All right. So I want to talk now about your experience. You're one of, I don't know how many people that have actually been on Shark Tank. And we can't get this through an interview without touching on that, because that is a big deal. So a couple of things, if you'll share your initial experience in Shark Tank. And because when I watched the presentation of you doing it, you looked very put together, very on target. You know, you only have so many seconds, 90 seconds or something like that, to do your presentation. You were on target. You were looking straight at them. You were, you know, you just seemed so confident. And yet I'm wondering what was going on inside you.
A whole lot, let me tell you what. But it was certainly so nerve-wracking. You know, back in my Intel days, I had even spoken in front of like a 4,000-person live audience keynote. And the Shark Tank experience, you know, completely overran that by far, as far as nerves. And I was only realistically in front of 5 people at that moment. But your nerves are just sky high. I was standing behind the doors. You know, they count down from what feels like 100 before they open the doors for you to walk in. And you have to hit your mark and do the pitch, the 90 seconds you're talking about there as the opener. And I mean, I was absolutely certain that I was going to pee my pants. I was literally going through it in my head, like, all right, this is it. Like, we're going to be on national television with pee on our pants. Like, I was really coming to terms with it because I just truly never felt like a physiological response to nervousness like I had in that moment. But as soon as those doors opened, like, it all just melted away and I walked down and I knew that I had been, you know, really preparing my whole life for this moment. Everything I've learned, everything I've done, every time I've applied myself in different situations, like I really knew that I was just ready for it. And, you know, in the 3 weeks leading up after I'd been notified that I would film, the reason it looked so buttoned up and that I knew all my numbers and everything was so sharp was because I studied for this like it was the SAT. You know, I mean, I had flashcards of all my business numbers and I was walking up and down the streets of SF saying my pitch like full emotion out loud, you know, just to really make sure that I was not going to get caught on live television, not knowing what I was saying. So it was probably the best preparation I could have ever had. I've certainly never been nervous talking to any other potential investor since then. It was just an overall great experience to get in front of them. They had awesome things to say about my skills as an operator. And though, unfortunately, no investment, mainly around in their eyes, you know, cookie dough not being healthy for you. And, you know, with the kind of obesity epidemic and health trends and whatnot, of course, I'm sitting there going, but it's dessert. Like, that's not going anywhere. It was still a great experience to go on. And we got lots of Shark Tank fans who have watched us grow over the years since all the way up until being featured again this spring with an update, kind of the After the Tank update on dope, which having not gotten a deal was pretty exciting.
Wow. So that's happening or that's going to happen, that we should see that soon?
Yeah, it just happened in May of this year, actually, with a little update on where dope is today. Maybe the most exciting piece that was shared in that update was that we went from around 800,000 in lifetime sales in filming. I think it was 3 years prior when we were on Shark Tank, and we're past 10 million in lifetime sales today. So just a huge accomplishment and really, really proud of the whole dope team for getting us here.
Well, congratulations on that. You know, when they say, you know, maybe it wasn't healthy or this or that, when there's desserts everywhere and they have sponsored or supported or invested is the right word, other dessert-like things. So I find like that answer is kind of, I don't know, maybe because it was raw dough or whatever. I'm not sure why they went that way, but you showed them. Congratulations.
Yeah. Too funny for sure. Coincidentally, the week after my episode had aired in 2019, they invested in a company called The Fat Shack. It was like 2,000 calorie sandwiches, you know, and just totally over the top. And over the years, I've just been certain that like they must have filmed these at very different times. And maybe, you know, an article about obesity or something had really struck the news right around when I was filming.
But, you know,
it was a bit of show for TV.
Either way, it didn't hurt being out there, whether they invested in you or not.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt.
Yeah.
You got out there. Your name got out there. And it's all good. So let me reintroduce our guest is Kelsey Marrera. She is the founder of the company Dope. Let me ask about the dough itself. Is it raw? Can it be cooked? Tell me a little bit about the product itself.
Yes. Okay. Well, for one, it's just like ridiculously delicious. So it's really, really awesome. It's exactly like real cookie dough. People always try it and they're like, whoa, this tastes like actual cookie dough. And I have to be like, because it is. It really is real cookie dough. We only replaced the eggs with a vegan egg substitute using flaxseed. So totally my like longtime tried and true chocolate chip cookie recipe, buttery, molassesy awesomeness, just safe to consume raw as we've replaced the eggs. And the flour we use is commercially heat treated to kill bacteria. So there's no risk of salmonella or E. coli with this cookie dough. You can eat it raw straight away as it is. It comes in cups or in bites that you can just snack out of the pouch. And then you can also bake it. So it's totally the best of both worlds. We say you can eat it or heat it. You can have it raw. You can bake it. And honestly, my favorite way is to like half bake it. You can put a little bit in a bowl and microwave it for like 10, 15 seconds and you'll have a little gooey cookie sundae. Throw some ice cream on that. I mean, I'm starting to drool. I don't know about you. It's so good. I'm still eating it after all these years. And we haven't changed the recipe once since I first created it back in 17.
Very good. Now, tell me some of the top flavors or just share some of the names with me because they're kind of clever.
Yeah, certainly unique. We like to have some fun with this. You know, after my days at Intel marketing, when I started to create my own brand, I went a little wild, just making it fun. And the goal is, you know, just making people laugh. So we got cute little characters with our flavors and on the packaging. Some of the best ones, longest time one, Ride or Die. That's our chocolate chip cookie dough. So truly the classic, and you can't go wrong. We've got Cookie Monster. It's a blue cookies and cream. It's like if you mashed a bunch of Oreos into cookie dough and dyed it blue. So that one is super fun. Kids and adults alike end up falling in love with it. Fairy Dust is our rainbow sprinkle. And Brownie Beast is one of my all-time favorites. It's a rich brownie cookie dough with chunks of brownie in it and chocolate chips. And it's delicious raw, but I also love that one as a cookie.
Very good. Well, they sound, I'm sure, delicious. I didn't really eat cookie dough much as a kid, maybe a little bit, but it wasn't my thing. But I love cookies, so maybe I just try the ones that are cooked. And do you have a cookie there that's wheat-free, gluten-free, and all, you know, for that person that would love to eat cookies but can't because of so many other reasons? Do you have that cookie yet?
We have another recipe for that underway right now. It hasn't been our main focus area. You know, we totally are about just delicious, nostalgic indulgence.
Cool.
And some of the recipes we'd made in the past, you know, just didn't live up to the true dopeness that I needed them to. And so, yeah, butter and wheat are in all of our recipes today and working on one that would be for a gluten-free audience, but coming soon.
Okay.
TBD on that.
Very good.
It's got to be up to my dope standards.
Now, I want to kind of bring it back as we end our interview. I want to talk about the challenges you had and the situation you needed to overcome. Will you share a little bit about your drinking days and, you know, did you have to hit rock bottom? I don't know if there is a rock bottom for people, if that's even a good saying anymore. Yeah. But tell me a little bit about your back there and then bringing it full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the phrase rock bottom, the best thing I've heard with this is that your rock bottom is when you decide to stop digging. Like, it can always go further. It can always get worse. It could always have a more dramatic outcome. But, you know, you get to decide when enough is enough. And for me, my journey with alcohol started when I was 14 years old. And the first time I drank till I blacked out. And with the struggles I'd had as a kid with anxiety and perfectionism, alcohol was kind of this numbing. I didn't have to feel. I didn't have to be worried. And I could honestly just try to pretend to be, you know, like the cool kids and just relax and drink. And so I started falling into that at a pretty young age, mostly in kind of the party social scene. And so as years progressed and I got into that career at Intel, had a long time relationship, everything seemed so okay on the surface that it was really hard for me to come to terms with the struggles I was having with alcohol. When I would drink to excess and really didn't have an off button. It's just kind of how I'm wired. I got lots of alcoholism in the family too. My mom is actually 5 years sober now. So runs in the family. And I had enough warning signs through the years, but it was really tough for me to finally say enough's enough. And that came in September of 2015. I was on a business trip in Barcelona. And those were kind of the worst for me because it was very let loose and nobody knows that you have a problem out on a business trip. Everyone else is ready to have fun. And unfortunately, you know, I came to at 3:30 in the morning in a stranger's apartment and having a whole night of regrets behind me and just decided that was it. I never wanted to feel this way again. I never wanted to be apologizing for stuff that I barely remembered doing and picking up the pieces, looking for my belongings. And I just knew I had a whole lot more to offer the world and alcohol was holding me back from being my best self every single day. And I just celebrated 7 years sober this September. So it's been, yeah, the best decision of my life. And my husband today, who I married in 2019, he's only ever known this, Kelsey. So there's just so many awesome things. I look forward to raising a family with him and having our children only know this version of me and not having all that struggle and pain for what, you know, it kind of became like alcohol is just not worth it. So I'm very, very happy with my decision. And for anybody out there who's struggling with drugs, alcohol, or any mental health challenges, just know that you're not alone and there is so much joy waiting on the other side. I believe in you and just reach out for some help.
And I think I heard in an interview that your grandmother had struggled with it as well.
Yes. Yeah. My Nana, she is really like an icon in my life. She was 21 years sober when she passed away and she was the very first call I made that morning in Barcelona and said, I'm done and I want to get sober. She'd been writing me letters like, you know, grandmothers tend to do over the years with concern, hoping I would get on the right path. And I finally called her and told her I was ready. And she said, in a sweet Scottish accent, but mind you, she was the sweet old Scottish lady. So she told me to get my wee butt to a AA meeting in Barcelona. And I did just that. I found an English speaking class that morning and made that choice from that day on. So
you were ready.
She was so proud. She got to see me 1 year sober before passing away. And unfortunately didn't see the husband I have today or see the creation of dope, but she knew I was going to be onto something great. You know, at a year sober, I was already baking like crazy and really getting my entrepreneur wheels moving and talking to her about different ideas. We used to watch Shark Tank together, actually. So I know she'd just be, she is so proud. And I'm sure she's eating a big whole bowl of cookie dough up there watching down on me.
She knew what you had in you. She was just ready for you to explore it. And she was there when you needed her. So that's lovely.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to switch gears one last time. Dope. Why did you come up with that name?
Yeah, so dope was born out of a myriad of just horrific dough puns. As you can tell from earlier in the interview, I just love puns. I like making people laugh, and silly jokes like this always tend to do that. So we'd come up with a bunch of different names. I was brainstorming with a friend of mine in San Francisco. We're like writing them down. Truly the classic like napkin story. We're trying to write down on this napkin these different ways we could write it. And, you know, I was trying to stop and just revisit. I said, I just want to make a really dope dessert brand. Like, I want it to be different than all these, you know, cupcake shops and everything that's bright pink and rainbows. Like, I want it to be really dope. And she said, dope could have dough in it. And the name was born. You know, it's hard to pronounce for people who are seeing it for the first time. You know, it's dough with a P on the end. And so inevitably we get like dopey or dough up or my favorite, you know, we had a guy come up once like, oh, Doug HP. My name's Doug. This is so cool. We love Doug for that, but it is dope. And, you know, for once you figure out how it's pronounced, it always sticks and people tend to like it. So we get the laughs we intended.
Well, very good. Kelsey, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for making life better and a little sweeter.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you. And if anyone wants to get some dope action, we are in select Walmart locations in California and online, of course, we ship nationwide. So dope.com. Thank you for having me.
To learn more about dope, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on your favorite streaming service. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez and take the show on the go. Lifestyles is on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us at 919Lifestyles and search for Lifestyles with Lillian on Instagram. Or go to kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the social media icons at the top of the page. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Natasha Coles, and our executive producer, Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.